She's feisty, she's funny, and she tells it like it is. Get ready for Empower Readings with Corby Mitlide. What are your opportunities right now? What are the possibilities? Ask Corby and cross the bridge from fear to fearlessness and fly. Here's your host, Corby Mitlide.
Hello there, and welcome to Empower Readings with Corby Mitlide. That's me. We have a small visitor in the studio today. Small if you're a human, huge if you're a cat. You may hear the occasional hello from Oswald the Great. If you do, just ignore him. He was not invited on the show, but brought himself anyway. What we're doing today, it's another one of those you and me sessions. We're going to talk about past lives, which happens to be a specialty of mine. A lot of you know me through a book called Your Soul's Plan by Robert Schwartz, and it's about discovering the real meaning of the life you planned before you were born. Very often we will come in with a weird fear or loving a place we've never been or just having this relationship with someone that doesn't make any sense, but we can't get out of it. Those are usually signs that there is some past life stuff going on. Simple example is my own self. I was brought up in an upper-class Jewish family in South Jersey. Always felt like I got on the wrong bus. Wasn't sure why I was there. Didn't really understand the cultural mechanics. Just did not fit. But because my father served in World War II, the unspoken thing was Germans are awful. Most of them are Nazis. Christians will want to convert you, or they're not really great for you. Okay. So I kind of just bought into that and used to have nightmares about Nazis and hearing German and the whole nine yards, which a lot of Jewish kids of my generation had. All of a sudden in 1991, I went to a place called the Old Rhinebeck Aerodrome, which is in upstate New York. It was run by the late, great Cole Palin. And it is a living and flying museum of vintage airplanes. And Cole had them all the way from the 1909 Blériot that crossed the English Channel to 40s Barnstormers. And the day that we went, they were doing their weekly World War I flying show. And it was very much old-time silent movie stuff. They had Trudy Truelove, and they had the Black Baron, who was, of course, the German guy, and Pierre Loup de Loup, and it was it belonged on Rocky and Bullwinkle. So that was fine. I really didn't feel like going to the Rhinebeck Aerodrome, but my date wanted to, and I said, fine, if we can go to Woodstock first, which is the candles and the hippie stuff, and that was really me, then we can go to Rhinebeck. So they bring me to Rhinebeck. Yes, dear, rusty airplane. Yes, dear, old engine. Just get me some popcorn and an iced tea, and I'll sit through this. Well, the American planes didn't do anything for me, and the French planes, and the British planes, and the Italian planes. And then all of a sudden, there was an Albatross D-5A, which was the German workhorse in the majority of the war. And it was followed by a mock-up of a Fokker triplane, which is the famous Red Baron, Snoopy and the Red Baron plane. All of a sudden, I felt this soundless explosion in my head, in my gut. And as I watched them take off, there were two thoughts in my head. There's a story there, and I flew that one. Without my really understanding it, I flipped overnight from being afraid of Germans, not caring anything or knowing anything about World War I, being afraid of hearing the language, to I was craving to speak German. I needed to know everything possible about the Germans who flew in World War I. I would look at pictures, and some faces would cause revulsion, and some were dear friends, and some had me in tears. This is overnight, with no explanation. My boyfriend at that time said to me about a week later, you noticed anything about your behavior? I hadn't. It was just such an overwhelming thing. I didn't look back and say, oh, well, this is different. Over the years, I found out that, yes, I'd flown there. I was one of the pilots. Yes, you can look me up, but that's not important. No, I was not the Red Baron, but he was a close friend. The most important thing was the person that I was in this war was very anti-Semitic, which for Germany at that point was normal. One of the memories I have was my captain introducing me to a fellow named Wilhelm Frankl. And Wilhelm Frankl was the only Jewish pilot who got a Blue Max, which is the highest award. And I remember Frankl holding his hand out to me to shake, and I very deliberately put my hands behind me and just nodded to him, wouldn't even touch him. Now, look, if I had that much trouble being anti-Semitic in that life, doesn't it make sense that I would be born into a Jewish family this time? And everyone in the family was comfortable being Jewish, was proud of being Jewish. It was the whole cultural thing, but I felt disconnected until I looked at this past life, figured it out, and realized I was put in a Jewish family to learn the contrast, that there is nothing from being Jewish that warranted being anti-Semitic. So this is an example of I deliberately chose coming into a Jewish family. One of the other things in there was my father, who is just a decade past as of this week, was really my best friend. He had been my best friend, literally my best friend, in an awful lot of past lives before that. But I knew I was giving myself a very big challenge in this lifetime. So his soul and my soul in the pre-birth planning session said, look, will you play the role of my father? Because I will need a father as a best friend since I was setting up my mother to be one of my biggest challenges. This is how past lives work. Now, there are four reasons for past lives and karma, and they're not quite what you think. Everyone thinks, oh, karma is just about good and bad. Not the way we have discovered it when we were working on the book. Karma can be balanced energy, neither good nor bad, but just balancing energy between two souls. When you need healing, when you want to serve, and when you want contrast. Contrast as in, let's say you wanted to learn about abundance. Well, you couldn't learn about abundance if all you ever were a wealthy person in Long Island or in Monte Carlo. Sometimes you need to be a water seller in Calcutta because, again, there's your balance. The thing that I will tell you about past lives, a lot of people want to know them just to see if they were somebody famous. My favorite apocryphal story is the woman that said, I must have been Anne Boleyn because I can't stand anything around my neck. I can't wear turtlenecks. Oh, please. I caution people, don't expect to be somebody famous. It is very, very rare that I will pick up that you were someone you could look up in any simple history book. Once or twice, yes. But most of the times, the lives that you need to remember are the simpler ones. So you don't get caught up in, I was this famous person, but instead look at the life and how it resonates with where you are. So let's take a look at someone's past life. And I've had people send me a very quick email on what they're interested in. So the first person that we're going to go to is Christine from Atlanta. Christine, are you there? If she's there, I can't hear her. Okay. Going for Christine.
Hey.
There you are. Hey, Chrissy, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good. All right, let me see if I have this right. This is what I got from you. I had a very strong experience at Chepstow Castle in southern Wales. I've long been attracted to the Middle Ages. Chepstow?
Yes.
Pronounce it for me. Chepstow, okay.
Chepstow.
I've long been... Yes, short E. I've long been attracted to the Middle Ages, late 12th century in Eleanor of Aquitaine. I'd never heard of Chepstow, and when we went to the the main thing they talked about was its English Civil War connection. However, it originated with a tower built by Henry II and given to William Marshall and his family. When I wandered back into that area, I was struck with an incredibly strong sense of being transported in time, seeing it as it was, banners flying, people, floors, and beams in place, etc. I was there. Okay. Give me a minute to plug in here for you, Chrissy. Hang on. I do see, if you will, a madhouse in a courtyard with horses being loaded and ladies coming out, getting into some kind of a closed contraption. It wasn't carried on people's shoulders, but it was kind of built like that. And I see you as a young man handing something up to one of the young ladies in the, I'll call it a carriage, but it's nothing so elegant. And getting in the front to drive it. I do not get the sense that you are a servant. It's more of a sense that you belong as part of the family, if you will, younger cadet branch. If this was an important family, you were part of it, but you weren't necessarily anybody who was ever going to have a big fat title and big fat lands.
Mm-hmm.
I see you going, it looks like you're going east towards London, but I don't see you necessarily getting there. I'm just seeing the vision of the trip. And interestingly, one of the women is pregnant, and you are the one. She is refusing to eat. She's very sick. But you make it your business to find anything that she'll be able to keep down. I have a sense that you were a younger brother to this person.
Right.
Because there is no sense of impropriety, but it isn't your wife and it's not your mother. So there is that sibling relationship. When I pinpoint this person, it's very interesting. I see you also 19th century American West, again, being able to do anything and make anything out of anything. You tend to go for lives where there are challenges. But it has to do with taking care of people as opposed to fighting people. If you fight anything, it's nature, it's circumstances. Looking at that American life, I see something along the Mississippi.
Is that also a man?
Almost. Yes. You are probably 80% of your lives are male. You are a female when you want to sit and think about life in general. Your doing and your action lives are male.
Mm-hmm.
You always seem to have the words coming to me as a rollicking good time. you like family, but you're not mad about being a father with kids. It's almost as if you'd rather be married to the world. And when I say that, it's not married in the, into the world like you're messing with anything that comes across your path, but you're more comfortable in nature. You're more comfortable with a group of people than a single person, because a relationship with just one person is too small for you very often. Are any of these things making sense to you, what I'm picking up?
Absolutely. Completely.
Okay. Wonderful. Tell me why it makes sense, because, you know, I never know what's going to come out of my mouth, and I always like to know why.
Well,
so how does this make sense?
The going back to the Chepstow Castle, the scene you describe is almost exactly the scene that I saw in front of me, without the details of the carriage and the family, but the bustle, it being the courtyard area where people are coming and going. That's exactly where I was in a courtyard area, and I could see pennons flying and people milling about, and very much the scene of a, you know, coming and going. It was almost a festival atmosphere, but it makes a lot of sense when you say, you know, people were getting ready to go on a journey. That jives completely with the sense that I got when I stood there. It was such a strong, an amazing moment when I walked into that space. And then what you said about the 19th century, I have known for a while that the last time around I was a man, that it was 19th century expansion. Didn't really think about the West, but certainly the same time period. And I knew I was a man in that life. I have often thought that I thought more like a man than a woman, but I feel very, very woman. I feel like a woman. I don't feel like I'm trapped in the wrong body or anything, or uncomfortable or any of that, but it doesn't surprise me at all to know that I have done the male thing many times and chosen female,
you know,
for a rest.
when people hear they've been a male more often, but they're in a female body this time, it's funny. Every single one of us, because I'm the same way. It's what I call a guy in a girl suit. We all say, but I like being a girl this time.
Yeah.
It wouldn't serve our purpose to be in a female body and yet still want to be a guy. Then that is working against our lesson plan, if you will. The way I talk about a guy in a girl suit, generally those of us who are overwhelmingly male life histories, we don't like playing what I call the girl games, the gossip and the manipulation and the bitchcraft. Just not our thing. I know that when Carl and I were at a restaurant, if we both run into the men's and ladies' room at the same time, we both come out at the same time, because I'm not busy fluffing and buffing. I'm straight arrow. This is what it's about. And I'm action oriented. So those are all male energy traits, but we can have them in a female body. Now, how do those male energies play out in a female body for you this time?
I'm very much in charge when I need to be. I have a lot of command presence. I don't own but about 3 or 4 pairs of shoes.
And none of them are my pillows, I bet.
I love playing dress up, and my house is full of costumes, and any opportunity to do, you know, that kind of thing. I have a lot of female characteristics, but the way I approach relationships and the way I approach life is much more male energy than female.
Mm-hmm. So all of this makes sense. And does it explain to you things about your life this time that you've wondered about? Do they make more sense now?
Yeah. One of the things that I have kind of wondered about is I made a decision really, really early in my life that I didn't want to have any children. And I have never regretted that. And to hear you say I have been not necessarily a father makes a lot of sense too, because it has just never, I mean, as much as I work with children, care for children, entertain and educate children, I feel parental, but never felt the need or the lack of, you know, of my own. I have my animals, and that fulfills that just fine for me. So yeah, that definitely kind of jives with what I have kind of known and thought about in the past too.
People who don't want children, and you're not sure why, it's not obvious why. Generally, it's a past life thing. I know that I was born without the mommy gene, clearly. And I knew from the time I was 13, I did not want children. In fact, back in the early 70s, when they would show you, you know, in health education, the film about this is how a baby was born, I was so freaked I had to go home. I left school because I just looked at that and I said, that is so not happening to me. Well, yeah. In doing some past life stuff, I found out the life immediately before this one, Italian-American in Chicago, born about 1918, died in 1949. So I had about 6 years between lives there. And I apparently had an affair with my husband's best friend. Got pregnant. The baby was stillborn. So that was that. But I was so upset about it that I spoke to one of the nuns. And this was a Catholic hospital, which at that time, a lot of nuns were doing a lot of the nursing work. Right. So when I became sick with sepsis, which they used to call childbed fever, the nuns all took counsel among each other and said, well, the Lord took the innocent child to himself already. So this is his judgment on her. And I was left to die in the hospital in filth and disease and alone and in pain. So it's no wonder I said, I don't think I want to do that again this time. Mm-hmm. And again, like you, I have never regretted it. I do my thing for youngsters by adoring my niece and nephew and having a great time with teenagers. When most parents say, I want to put my kids in a barrel with a bunghole, give them to me, because I'm only the biggest kid in the room. So we understand each other really well.
Right.
This was an absolutely great way to start the past life thing. So I am so thrilled. I really appreciate the call, and I'm glad that we were useful to you. So
thank you very much.
And keep listening.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now, there are all kinds of reasons why we come in. If you remember, one of the things that I talked about was healing. One of the main stories in your soul's plan is about a woman named Penelope who came in deaf. And when we looked at her pre-birth planning session, we realized that this was a deliberate choice on her part because she had heard the gunshot by her mother's boyfriend that killed her mother in the last life. And it totally ruined her life. She died very early, very tragically. So she said this time, I want to be deaf. I want to totally erase that feel. I don't want to have that happen this time. Once she understood that her deafness was actually a chosen gift, life became a lot more sensible to her. Now, in the second half of the show, we have some other people. We're going to be looking at connections again to times or places that fascinate people. We're going to be looking at fears. If you come in with an irrational fear of refrigerators, or you look at chocolate fudge and you panic, well, obviously there's nothing in the refrigerator or the chocolate fudge, but there's a past life memory that you're kicking up. We will also look at relationships, very intense ones. The example that I gave with my own father was he and I were always best friends, very close. He understood the wiki-woo part of me when nobody else in the family did. And that is because we chose, as souls that are normally best friends, to come in and support each other with some rough stuff this time. So we'll also be looking at relationships. And I want you to, as you listen to other people's stories, think about yours. See if you can't put together some longings, some fears, some places you've loved, or some relationships. You might be able to puzzle this all out for yourself. So, this is Corby Midline. We're doing Empower Readings. We will see you on the flip side.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
This bobcat's heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
How do you wake up the entire African American community to the hidden issue of mental health problems? Share your story.
My sadness and depression grew out of giving myself to my career before I would give myself to myself. And then I am out there speaking in front of thousands of people with a smile pasted on my face, but dying on the inside. Hiding sadness makes you more and more sad because it closes you off. And I think that being able to talk about it is so liberating. Giving voice to what you're feeling is part of the healing. And the most revolutionary and healing thing that Black people can do right now is to love one another.
This is Terry Williams, co-founder of the Stay Strong Foundation. It's time for us to wake up, stand up, and speak up. Together we can do this. Search online for stories that heal. We must share ourselves. Healing starts with us. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
Welcome back to Empower Readings with Corby Mitlide on Empower Radio. Your calls are next at 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. Now, back to Corby Mitlide on Empower Radio.
So before our break, we're talking about past lives today. We took a look at Chrissy from Atlanta, and we found out why she was drawn to a certain area of England and how that actually also played out in further lifetimes. Now, when I do past life readings, I don't always get that one life will lead into another. Sometimes they are very different because we don't have to work on every single thing in each life. So let's take our next caller, and I think that we have Nicole. Nicole, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Nicole. Where are you calling from?
I live in Clarence, New York, which is just outside of Buffalo.
Got it. Okay, this is what Nicole sent me. There are three different things. All right, this is what you sent. I have always been very intuitive and into gemstone nature in the spirit world. I've had this weird connection to Montana, and I don't have any idea why. Then there is my non-connection with men. Father left me, stepdad left, and doesn't bother with us. And then my son's father did the same thing. That's a biggie. And you also mentioned Victorian houses. Now, the Victorian house thing is not ringing a bell with me right now, but what connected immediately were the first two, the intuitive and the Montana connection.
Okay.
So I don't know if you know anything about the Blackfeet tribe.
No,
Native American,
actually,
do you? Okay.
No.
Okay. The Blackfoot comes from Montana. And my sense is that you were Blackfoot, you were, I don't want to use the word apprenticed too, because that's a very white term, but your desire to know nature deeply, your desire to craft things beautifully meshed when you were part of the Blackfoot tribe. I think that you may have been slated to work with the shaman.
Okay.
But you were much more interested in beautiful things. You had an artist's soul. You tried very hard to combine them.
Okay.
But you can't serve two masters.
Right.
So it was very clear that you weren't going to do this. When I use the word sacrifice, you weren't going to dedicate yourself to the people's medicine the way you needed to. And so in that sense, you kind of lost your place, if you understand what I mean by that. You did make very beautiful things. You made solid weaponry. You did a lot of the women's things, the basket weaving and the clothing making. Yet at the same time, you were a man's man. And this was not, it didn't jibe well. You know, you weren't Heyoka. Heyoka in some tribes is the contrary. And they would be men who would wear women's clothing, say goodbye when they meant to say hello, et cetera, because that was considered particular medicine.
Okay.
So you spent a lot of time doing women's things. You connected more with women than men.
Okay.
To the point where you were in a lot of ways derelict in your duty. You did marry. It wasn't a high caste, if you will, marriage. You did have kids. But you didn't care much for them. You were not good with people, but it was different not good with people than Chrissy. Chrissy just didn't want to go one-on-one, but she loved people. You didn't like people very much. Because people could not be perfected the way a basket could be perfect. A weapon could be a perfect balance, perfect heft. An article of clothing, beautiful. People got old and sick and dirty, and it's just, you were not into that. So your non-connection with men may carry over partially from that.
Okay.
When you were not there for so many people in that life, this is a contrast life. Well, I need to know what it feels like on the other side. Not I was bad, so everybody should leave me. That's the victim think, which I just don't fly with. Okay?
Okay.
So as far as the non-connection with men this time, I'm also hearing in terms of karma, it's also a matter of working on your independence. Because I think that there was a life, there certainly was a life between that with the Blackfoot tribe and now, where this one seems to be, all right, Blackfeet was, this was like 16th, 17th century. This was very early. So this is not, you know, the Wild West, blah, blah, blah. Because the next life that I see with you is somewhere in 18th century And there is the connection both with London and Boston. I'm seeing literally a line drawn between the two. So I think you would hear in the colonies. And you were someone who, in this life, liked to be left alone, didn't want to have to do things on your own. So you were something of I'm going to start because that comes up in mind. You married early. Your husband died. You knew the widow very well.
Yes, Corby.
Okay. Yes.
There's some kind of, I don't know if it's feedback or whatever. I can't hear you. It's like you just turned into like a robot.
Okay.
I don't know if it's my connection or yours.
I'm not sure. You're sounding perfect.
Corby?
Okay.
Corby, this is Bob. Can you hear me?
We're going
to reconnect, okay? Let's try another Skype connection, and we'll just pick up from there.
Okay, so you want me to unplug and replug?
Yeah, no, I'm going to call you back. I think it's a Skype connection.
Okay, so since this is pre-recorded, Chrissy, Nicole, we'll just redo it. It's not a problem.
Yeah, you sound okay now. Yeah.
Now it sounds good. Sorry.
Okay.
No, that's okay. Just pick up where you left off, Corby.
Yeah. Where did I start sounding fuzzy?
I heard 18th century London, Boston.
Okay, I'm going to take it from there, Bob, okay? So I see a connection with 18th century London and Boston, and so I see you in the colonies.
Okay.
This was contrast, and then in this life, you didn't want to have to survive on your own.
So that's kind of how I feel in this life right now, too.
Okay. But in this one, you were a little calculating, which I don't think you are now. you married young. Your husband died. You had a son. You didn't do the widow thing very well. So you basically plotted and planned. And you didn't care how old, ugly, smelly, whatever they were, as long as there was money and you were safe. And you ended up with three husbands. You didn't kill any of them, but you didn't mourn them either.
Okay.
So that by about 1760, you were a wealthy widow, comfortable. You were socially acceptable, but men kind of looked at you askance, and women hung on to their husbands a little tighter around you.
Okay.
You managed to send your son to England for schooling, and he helped with the trading business that your first husband had to sell. He came back in as a junior partner from the guy who had bought it. So that in that lifetime, you knew what it was to totally manipulate relationships to keep you safe. Mm-hmm. One of the things about this lifetime is it is contrast, and it needs to teach you emotional independence, that you can be safe no matter what. When you need to be with somebody because you'd like to be, not because you feel you need to be, things are going to settle down quite a bit. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Like I did with Chrissy, explain to me in the audience how this works for you.
Well, just the fact that I'm a single mom and the fact that I don't want to be with someone for the wrong reasons. Mainly my son is like male. He's like starving for male attention. He wants a dad. He's 7. I don't want to get into a relationship based on his needs because that's not what that's based on. So that whole thing just made a lot of sense.
Okay. Good. How is knowing this going to help you move forward? Because that's really the point of knowing a past life.
It's going to help me move forward in the fact that
I do know now, after soul searching and meditating and all that, that I really do need to realize that I don't need anybody else except for myself. Like when you said that, that was like, that hit home to me. So pretty
gotcha.
Much I think that that's
good.
And as soon as I do realize that it's a want and not a need, I believe too that things will just fall into place.
Perfect. Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, delighted to have helped today with this.
Thank
and
you so
appreciate
much.
The call.
Okay, great.
Keep us,
I appreciate your time.
Keep us on the dial. Keep listening.
I will. Thank you so much, Kirby.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right. So we've got another caller on the line. We've got Suzanne. Suzanne, welcome to Empower Readings.
Hi, this is Suzanne.
Suzanne, where are you calling from?
Reston, Virginia.
I think I know. Where is Reston? Is that northern or southern?
North.
Okay.
Not far from D.C.
What? Got it. That places it for everybody. All right. What you wrote to me about, I have a real problem with crowds. It's not a fear exactly. I'm not afraid in crowds. I don't fear for myself or safety in general. Instead, I become very anxious, unsettled, and have an almost overpowering drive to get out of the crowd. I'm not claustrophobic about spaces. I can be in small places. It's the people that make me edgy, even angry, way out of proportion to the situation. Because of this, I avoid things like concerts, fairs, and festivals, even a mall or a large store on a weekend as a trial. And I have to tell you, the very first place I put you is the French Revolution.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm seeing you in the middle of one of those, let's go see the guillotine for entertainment crowds.
Oh, that would be distressing.
Yes. And you're there not because you want to be, but because, you know, if you're not, you may be seen as a sympathizer with the blue bloods. And so you're there. You can't stand it. You know that one of these days it's going to get out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time you go, you almost never watch what's happening. Your face is turned toward the guillotine. But you are always keeping your radar out. How fast can I get out of here? Where are, you know, any gendarmes? Where get the people who would disperse the crowd? So it was a matter of you didn't trust your neighbors. You weren't supposed to trust the blue bloods. Who could you trust? And when you could get away from the crowds, where could you could be home with your family. You could run the little tavern that you had because you didn't mind running running the little place of business with food and drink and, you know, the few beds upstairs.
Okay.
It was when you felt pushed to go into a situation where you had to pretend you were false that drove you crazy. And I think today especially there's a very big crowd mob mentality in the United States. The fear mentality we're all fed. The you know, if you don't agree with everything the U.S. says, you're not patriotic, and then people look at you funny and are you a terrorist, and.
Yes.
We have a magnificent country when it has a brain. Right now, a lot of it doesn't have a brain. And people are running on the idea of fear, on the idea of scarcity, of the idea that we are supposed to be number one, when if you look at all of the objective measurements, we're not number one anymore. Other countries have better education, better infant mortality, better wages. And yet, you can't talk about that very often.
Not openly, no.
No, not on Main Street USA. So the more that this life echoes that one, the more you will want to hide.
Mm-hmm.
You feel your anger around people you don't even know.
Yes.
You do everything you can to pad yourself from the pain. And you probably find a way to put yourself in almost another time for the comfort. Mm. Is all of this making sense to you?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Okay. Explain why it makes sense. You know, that's how I need to learn things.
Well, one of the first things that struck home with me was when you said I would be facing the guillotine but not engaged. I notice when I'm in crowds, I literally have a sort of heads down, head for the exit sort of physical standing. Head down and bow out. I am drawn to other times and places. I'm in a history club. So the idea of escaping the modernness by retreating into the past.
Okay.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Okay. So do you think that this could help you be less claustrophobic if you understood that it's an echo from 250 years ago?
Honestly, I don't know. I'm going to try, though. I'm certainly going to be more aware of it and look at it that way, as opposed to I'm just irrational and unreasonable in crowded places, which is kind of how I've been made to feel.
Okay.
Calm down and deal
with it. Okay, great. Yep, perfect. Okay, we have one more call that I want to get to, so I appreciate the call in, and I hope that this proves useful for you. Okay. We have a second Chrissy next. Chrissy, I didn't get anything in particular from you, but we have the time. Can you give us very quickly something, either a fear or a place that you want to get to know that you've never been to, or a relationship thing?
I just give you a Facebook thing about me being really drawn to Native American culture. And I've never...
To Native American culture, was that?
Yes.
Because I'm not hearing you very well, Chrissy.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I wrote you a Facebook thing about you being really drawn to Native American cultures. And I don't know if that helps. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. When you say drawn to Native American cultures, is there any particular tribe, or what is it about the culture that draws you?
Just the way they live and the storytelling and just pretty much anything that has to do with Native American culture. And
okay. Okay, this is what I'm going to recommend for you. I'm going to actually use you as an illustration of Dig Deeper. When we have this generalized feeling, because saying you're drawn to Native American culture without a pinpoint of place or time or the part of the culture, I like Star Trek. Doesn't mean that I was ever a Vulcan. So I would suggest that you explore that a little bit. See if you can pull some patterns. For instance, as far as I go, a lot of people think I'm Native American. I'm not. I'm German. But they see how I'm drawn to ravens and crows, especially. Ravens can be taken two ways. If you take them from the European viewpoint, ravens belong to the Morrigan. She is the bringer of war and death. She's very important to the Celtic panorama. But raven is a bad bird there. If you go to the Native American, especially the Northwest Native tribes, raven is close to coyote. a trickster. He brought the sun, moon, and the stars. He's funny. He's feisty. He's all good things. So since that's how I'm drawn to Raven, that pinpointed me in the Native America, the Northwest Native direction, as opposed to what Raven was for the Celtic. Okay? So that's where I would suggest you go. Start getting a feel for what it is. See if you can pinpoint it down. And then if you wanted to come back on the next Past Life show, we'll see if we can figure that out for you. Okay?
Okay. Is that it?
Yes. Thanks so much. I appreciate your call.
Welcome.
Bye. So I hope that this gave everybody an idea about what past lives are like. As you can see, when you really look at specifics in your life that don't make clear sense, then that's something worth exploring. Just because, however, you have trouble holding a job doesn't necessarily mean that you kept firing people from the mill in 1840 Lowell, Massachusetts. It could be simply that you haven't found what you love yet. Past lives are not the answer to everything, but they can explain really left of center needs and ideas. If you can find the past lives and several and bring them together, then that may make a lot more sense to you. One of the things that we learned about me, I tend to come in when the world is changing. I've been a knight during the Wars of the Roses when it was changing dynastic lines in England. I was a German pilot in World War I where the German Empire came crumbling down. So my thing, look where we are now. The world is changing again. My chosen path is to be in situations where it's not going to be the same anymore and helping people work through the change. Knowing that, even as crazy scary as the world can be these days, I know I put myself in the exact right time. So if past lives can help you in the present moment to reframe your future, that is exactly what they're meant to do. Again, don't just look for past lives because, gee, I'd love to know. You will spend so much time watching the movie of you, you'll forget to live here. And this is the place that you really want to be. This is where we make the most difference. Now, past couple of shows have needed to be pre-recorded, but the next one will indeed be live. And I believe that I'm going to have Debbie Quinn from Blue Moon Herbals on. We'll be talking about goddess energy, how you can bring it in to your own life. And she's also superb when it comes to herbs, essential oils, what you can do to support yourself in terms of health, beauty, comfort, in the most natural way possible. I've known Debbie for quite some time. If you do any of the psychic expos here in the Northeast, probably you have met her. So, next week, questions for the show, you can put them into the general category. And don't forget to call us. We would love to hear from you. It's been a great few weeks. I've so much enjoyed this, but now I need to know what you want to hear. I've run through a lot of things. Talk to me. Send us the email. We want to help you cross your particular bridge from fear to fearlessness and fly. So we'll see you next week. It's Corby Mitt live for Empower Readings.